Hey, this is Nathan Martorell, and you're listening to Friars on the Farm.
Welcome to episode 241 of Friars on the Farm. I'm Donovan, and with me is Roy.
Oh, man, I've been looking forward to getting together with you after this weekend. It's been an eventful weekend in Padres land.
Very eventful weekend. And last week, we just, it just didn't line up. And, you know, life goes on in our lives, and it just didn't line up. And I had the agenda all set up, and we just couldn't pull the trigger and get it together. So we did skip a week. We're here this week. It's Monday. You guys will be getting this on probably Tuesday after I get off work. But hell, I mean, you know, one of the things about what we do is we have to say goodbye to guys. You know, we love the Padres, and that is the team that we follow. And we cover the minor leagues. And when you cover the minor leagues, those guys get traded.
Right. So today we're going to kind of condense the major league minute and the minor league minute as we kind of break down the big Luis Arraez trade, yeah. The Donovan Solano signing, and kind of go over that. And then we're going to bring you the affiliate rundown after that. We're going to talk about all the stuff that happened in, up and down the system, including opening day in the Arizona Summer League.
Arizona. It's ACL. It's the Arizona Complex
League. Always going to call it the Arizona Summer League.
All right.
ACL is a ligament in your knee. Come on now.
Right. All right. But first, guys, before we get started, go to Apple, hit subscribe, give us a review. Go to YouTube, hit subscribe, smash the subscribe button. I have fun putting together the videos. I have fun putting together the agenda, you know, the whole episode. I don't have any videos this episode, but go there, subscribe. It's great for us. Follow us on X, on Instagram, on Threads. We have merch. I'll put the link in the description of the episode. But if you go to tchip.com/stores/friarsonthefarm-store, you'll get us there. Some cool shirts. I bought myself a sweet hoodie. That's the front. Very, very sweet looking. We can barely see it there. And yeah. And there in the back, it says Friars on the Farm. This is really cool material. $39.95. I decided to support my own podcast by buying myself a hoodie. I need new merch for the Friars on the Farm. You guys check it out. We have shirts. We have mugs. I have wallets in there, which is kind of funny. And, dude, I got shoes in there. I got women and men's high-top shoes with little Friars on the Farm. I know that's probably not ever going to be anyone but me buying that, but, you know. You support.
Are you going to rock a pair of Friars on the Farm kicks? Dude, seriously?
I'm eventually going to probably buy a pair. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, go for it.
Yeah, a little something new. But yeah.
All right, so we got something new in the Padres' big league roster. The Padres made a big trade with the Miami Marlins, traded for Luis Arraez. So people keep saying he's the closest thing to Tony Gwynn. I don't love that comp. We can talk about that. But to get him, they gave up Jacob Marcy, Nathan Martorella, two friends of the podcast, reliever Woosuk Go, who is already on the major league roster, and outfielder Dylan Head. So two guys that we've talked to personally, another guy that we were hoping to get a chance to talk to this year, and then Woosuk Go. So I'll start with him. I was surprised that he didn't make the team out of spring training. And he's been in Double A, and we keep bringing him up every week. And the strikeout numbers look good. The walk numbers look good. But in between, he's been getting hit around quite a bit. So with a $4.5 million contract between 2024, 2025, they offloaded that. And then the final piece to this, which kind of blew my mind, the Marlins are paying Luis Arraez contract this year outside of the balance of the minor league minimum. So the Padres actually saved some money on this deal. So it's unfortunate to watch some guys that we were getting to like leave, but I am more than excited to see Luis Arraez in a Padres uniform.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. I was watching the missions game, and for some silly reason, I just clicked on, you know, between it just for some reason, I was to check Twitter. Okay. In between pitches or whatever. And I see, oh, there's the Arraez. Okay. There's the trade, but they haven't said who was going in the other side. So I kept watching the game. Jacob Marcy's at bat, and I click over, and I think it was Ken Rosenthal who reported it was, you know, Nathan Martorella, Jacob Marcy, Woosuk Go, and Dylan Head, and I'm literally watching
months.
excuse me, Marcy at bat. And believe me, I was just as freaked out as I am right now about it. And eventually he struck out. I didn't see that. I thought he walked. And then the next batter up is Nathan Martorella. And I'm like, holy cow, they don't know about it yet. Watch his at bat. He gets on base. He gets over to second base. And then by that time, the news gets to San Antonio, and Luke Montz comes out and he starts talking to the umpire, and like the announcers that I saw you guys post the video, they're like, yep, it looks like it's starting to get there here. You know, it's official. And poor Martorella dude's like, what? Okay. And then, you know, right when he showed up with Luke, he's like, what the hell's going on? He's like, you're getting traded.
That was an awkward scene. I don't know that I've ever seen that, somebody getting pulled off the field in the middle of an inning due to a trade. That was bizarre timing.
Yeah, absolutely bizarre timing. And to get to Luis Arraez, who Predators had an eye on for, you know, since spring training, I think it's a solid trade, because, you know, all the evaluators are saying that Nathan Martorella and Marcy are going to be, you know, maybe fourth outfielder. You know, Martorella can find the power. He's a role player. Both those guys are not going to be everyday major leaguers. We'll see how it goes. Development is not linear. And Wusa Go, who is just really a salary dump, and then Dylan Head, who seems to be the centerpiece of this trade, is 19 years old and just starting out his career in pro ball. To get someone that hits, you know, in the high 300s, low 300s, and is a table setter, which is more than we have enough boppers, but just enough to do lengthen that lineup, I think is fantastic.
Right. Yeah. What we've seen so far this season, when this team gets going, they're good at passing the baton. That seems to be a new thing this year, that guys, they're valuing the out more than they were before. And so you've got guys like Profar and Merrill and Campusano that have that approach where they're not giving away strikes. They're not giving away outs. They're happy to take the line drive the other way on the pitch low and away, where it seems like the last few years, the guys have been swinging over that slider because they're trying to hit it to the moon. And so you have power in Machado, Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, and then you keep going to Profar, Campusano, Kim. There's power up and down the lineup. You need guys that are going to keep the chain going. And so you put Arraez at the top of that lineup. I mean, he fits so well.
Yeah.
So he's primarily a DH. He's going to play a little bit of first base, a little bit of second base. Apparently he's played third and left in the past. I don't think we're going to see that.
No.
But he's a DH. And so traditionally your DH, you want it to be a slugger, because usually it's somebody who's on bad knees. He's washed, you know, he's old. He can't play in the field anymore. Well, that's not Arraez. He's athletic. No. It just doesn't show up in the field. It shows up in the batter's box. But you don't need somebody to play in the field, because you've got seven established starters at your seven positions. So then it's a matter of between him and Donovan Solano, who we're going to talk about in a minute. Just filling in days off, giving guys a rest to get off their legs. Like today, Manny Machado's got the day off. So you got Solano starting at third base. But really this stretches the lineup so much more. Now I mentioned the Tony Gwynn, and people keep bringing up the Tony Gwynn comp because he hits for average. And Luis Arraez is a singles hitter. He's singles, a few doubles. I truly believe that if Tony Gwynn played in this era and the way that they evaluate the game, the way they value slugging and other things, when he played, you didn't want to strike out. You wanted to hit for average. People didn't like taking walks. Walks didn't have the value that they have now. So I believe now, if he played in today's game, his offensive profile would be closer to what you see out of Juan Soto. I don't know if he'd be quite at that level as far as power, but he'd hit for a lot more power. Maybe he wouldn't be a career 338 hitter. Where Arraez, career, whatever, 325 hitter, doesn't slug like Tony ever slugged. And
no,
I would like to think that maybe Rod Carew is a more fitting kind of a comp.
Right.
Maybe doesn't have the speed that Carew had, but the ability, the bat control, the preparedness, the understanding of looking at a defense and being able to place the ball. Like, so he went 4-for-4 in his first game, but the one that impressed me most was the, I think it was his third hit of the game, where he kind of he had this weird, awkward little handsy swing.
Yeah.
And he just flipped it over the third baseman's head. And that's something that you only do when you're just trying to poke the ball out there and get a single. There's value in that. I love that. And it's, I think it's a great balance, a great fit for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. A guy gets on base, and that's what you want. Have him get on base, move the line down. Same thing with Jackson Merrill. You have two guys that Merrill, I'm sure, will come into some power, but two guys that just good bat-to-ball skills are always going to get on base. They're going to be the table setters, and then you have your boppers behind him in Tatis, Machado, and Bogarts. Whenever Bogarts get back to hitting hard, you got the makings of a longer lineup. And I think with this lineup, he's going to get a lot more pitches to hit because it's like, all right, I got a rise, and then, damn, I got Tatis, and then I got Machado. Like, where's the weakness in that lineup? Sure, when you get a little bit lower, it's going to get a little weaker in Cronenworth and Kim, but still, like, it lengthens the lineup. It so many times last year, it was like two outs, a couple guys on, and then it was a swing and miss. It was a strikeout, or it was a pop-up to shortstop. Now we got guys that got a lot of bat-to-ball skills. Put the ball in play, good things happen. And the guy, Mark Grant, always says that. Put the ball in play and good things will happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, last year it was Grisham and it was Nola, and it's just a dead spot there in the lineup. So, yeah, how many times? Runner on second and third, and you got one out, and then next thing you know, we're turning it over to the next inning. So then you add to that Donovan Solano, who he's 36. Got to figure that he's toward the end of his career, but even still, last year with Minnesota, he put up a 760 OPS. He's had above a 700 OPS every year since 2016. And he started playing, 2016, he was with the Yankees. He was out of the majors for a couple of years, but then 2019, 2021 with the Giants, Cincinnati in 22, 23 with Minnesota, and OPS in the 800s and the 700s each of those years, right-handed. He's right-handed.
Yep.
You've got Arias, who's left-handed. So you've got versatility, you've got experience, but both of those guys, they don't strike out, and they put the ball in play. So yep. It's a really good fit, and you're not relying on Tyler Wade. He did a good job with the time he had. Iggy Rosario, he's the guy that got optioned down when Solano got selected. He's done pretty well, and he's hit for a lot more power than I expected. It's just the strikeout rate is through the roof.
Yeah,
and so when you had those guys starting at third base, you had that it's like a pothole in the lineup, and now you just came and filled up that pothole, and now it's nice smooth sailing. Hopefully,
And then Paulie and Eggy get regular at bats, and there's still lots of development. Right. Obviously, lots of development in Graham Paulie. Can't say enough about what he did last year, but making him a major leaguer this year was almost by accident and necessity. Where now he can get down there, get some regular at-bats. Eggy, same thing. Those are two players that should be playing every day. Eggy did have a better, more success in the come off the bench role, but still there was a lot of swing and miss in that at-bat. So both those guys go down there, get regular at-bats, continue to develop, and you got Solano and Arise, who are major league minimum, are just for a song, which really frees up more payroll. So down the line looks where we are during the right around the All-Star break, when the trade deadline comes up, that we have that flexibility to maybe go out and get another arm. Hell, maybe even get another power bat.
I saw Solano is on track to make something like $1.5 million this year.
Okay.
But regardless, between that and the money that changed hands in the Arise trade, they're still coming out ahead versus where they were a week ago. So we talked about Woosuk Go, but also Jacob Marcy, Nathan Martorella, and Dylan Head. So far this year, what those guys have been doing, Jacob Marcy's been struggling quite a bit at Double A. And we were wondering how that transition would work. Both of those guys got a chance to play a little bit in Double A last year, but they didn't get nearly enough time to be able to make an assessment of who they are. So the question is, how are they going to hit advanced pitching? How are they going to hit that pitching once they get a book and they understand how to pitch these guys? So Jacob Marcy, all year, he's been busted up and in. They just keep throwing the pitch up and high and in, and he cannot figure out how to get his hands on top of that pitch.
Yeah.
And so he's been exploited at the Double A level. Now, that could be one adjustment away from taking that next level. Who knows? But his a lot of evaluators were looking at him as a fourth outfielder. That's kind of what his profile is, kind of a maybe a Travis Jankowski type, not the defensive, but you know, he's got some speed. He's got a little bit of pop and he can hit enough, but not an impact player at the MLB level. I mean, I don't mean to be a jerk saying that, but let's be honest. That's kind of who he tracks to be, right? Maybe a Jose Azokar type, left-handed hitting Jose Azokar.
Absolutely. And Dylan Head, first round pick, still 19 years old, lots of upside there. But then again, he's 19 years old and A ball. So, you know, Preller just seems to prowl. And that is, you know, as much as we doubt that guy, you know, Marcy and Margarella weren't going to make the squad next year. They might have gotten a cup of coffee next year, maybe something this year, but the lineup has been pretty much set. So what they need to do is take what they have in the minor league system and add to it at the major league level. And that's what they've done.
Right. Because none of these guys outside of Go were really a part of the Padres plan in 2024. I guess I could have seen a situation where Margarella really went crazy. And then toward the end of the year, you need another bat, a bench bat to bring up. You add him. But even then, I don't really see that. I mean, a contending team doesn't make that kind of a move late in the season. Yeah. So Martorell is the one guy that's been off to a good start. He's hitting .292, the .393 on base, and he's slugging .427 in Double A. Pretty darn good.
Yeah.
The power hasn't quite been what it was last year in Fort Wayne. But then, so for Matt Fryers, they interviewed him and they had this interview all ready to go and they had it scheduled to drop today. And then this trade happened. So Matt Fryers put out a great interview today, and one of the things they asked him was about the power, and he talked about that he's in San Antonio playing in Wolf Field. Most games, you got a 30-mile-an-hour wind blowing in from right field, so it doesn't make sense to put the ball up in the air when you're playing in that. So it makes some sense why you're not seeing the power numbers from him. And also, he's trying to tailor his approach so that he's not a power over hit guy. He wants to be the bat is the carrying tool, and he has the power behind it. Maybe like Josh Naylor kind of down the road. And maybe that's who he becomes. I mean, there's a great example of a first base DH that is right now an absolute impact player at the major league level that the Padres let go. And Ty France is another guy that comes to mind. So he's the one guy that for me hurts a little bit on top of us having talked to him. Cause I was so impressed just by his whole demeanor and his drive. It's not even positivity. It's belief in himself. It's like, this is who I am. I'm a major league player. It's just up to me to get there. And you see that in that Matt Fryers interview, there's some of those quotes in there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I messaged both of them and said, hey, man, I said, F, I was watching the game when it happened. We both wish you the best of luck. You're going to be major leaguers. It's just going to take a little bit of time. And we'll continue to follow, we'll continue to follow you as you progress in your career. But let's move on. And,
on that note, though, it's one thing that we always bring up when these deals happen is that in Miami, there is a clear path for all of those guys to make a major league roster in the next couple of years. So they have way better opportunity there than they would ever have in San Diego. So it's a blessing in disguise for them. I hope they aren't taking this like they weren't wanted over here, but some guys get a chip on their shoulder from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a part of the business. It's the part of the game. And if someone traded you, that means someone else wants you. And that's huge. Absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on and let's go from Double A major leagues all the way down to where it begins. And that's in the Arizona Complex League.
Happy opening day.
Yeah, last Saturday was the opening day for the Arizona Complex League, the ACL, you'll hear us say. David J. from Mad Friars did talk to Riley Westman, the director of player development for the Padres, and this is what he wrote. Because the majority of the club's international free agent signings last year and is this level have signed for $10,000 or less to accommodate the large bonuses paid to Ethan Salas and Leo Dallas DeVries, the Padres ACL squad doesn't have many high-profile prospects on the roster. However, the team is starting to show some ability to sign and develop older pitchers from Latin America and who look to build on that trend this year.
You know what? Before you continue, one other point I wanted to make about this trade. They were able to get Luis Arraez. They didn't have to move Ethan Salas, Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko, Leo DeVries, Graham Pauly, Adam Mazur, there are a lot of good players that the Padres have been able to hold on to while making this trade and the Dylan Cease one. I just wanted to make that point before we moved on.
No, absolutely. And pitching is what this team, what the Major League team needs kind of more than anything. And they've been able to hold on to all that. So that's incredibly, it's incredibly Preller-like. All right. So what happens in this league? It's all about development. Teams have the right to agree in advance to play shortened games. Pitch counts rather than game situations dictate work on the mound. And even with two scheduled off days, most weeks players get more frequent rest and active rosters of 30 players or more. The season begins over a month earlier than before and will wrap up just after the draft in July, significantly changing who will play at the rookie level, at the rookie league level.
MLB's I'm sure the umpires appreciate that.
Right.
Having to umpire in those 110 degree August days.
They call it the heat league for now. You know, they call it the heat league. MLB's move to limit domestic minor league rosters to 165 players. That's from ACL all the way to AAA. Beginning this season also puts an extra strain on clubs to find a way to cover all the innings that pitchers will need to throw before then.
So David Jay, he put out this season preview here. And so he wrote about the level before you head to a fire league game. I like this little primer. Forget everything you think you know about what professional sports looks like. Games are often played on the backfields of teams' complexes, with only a handful of people who aren't team's employees or players' families in attendance. You'll need to bring your chair, drinks, and snacks. Even with the pitch clock, be prepared for games to last more than 3 hours if they go the full nine innings. So that means there's a little bit more time in between innings. So there is a pitch clock between pitches, but between innings, between plays, they're a little more lackadaisical about the rules. And it's because it's a developmental league. Right. Yeah, it isn't about the competition. It's about the development and learning and growing.
Yeah. So you might get guys that hit leadoff every game to get at bats. Also, the umpires are brand new as well. So it's not like minor league, you know, season minor league umpires. It's beginning umpires, beginning professional umpires, starting the complex league. And we talked to a guy, I can't remember his name, talked to him a couple seasons back. He was let go at the end of that season. So he lasted one season as a professional umpire and then was released.
It's a two-man crew down there, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Same thing in the minor leagues, just a two-man crew. So the balls are the strike zone is the strike zone is developing as much as the players are developing. So it's the development league 1 through 9 and from blue.
All right. So we got a few questions here with director of player development, Riley Westman. So Mad Friars asks, with the changes to the complex leagues this year, what does that mean for pitching workloads? Riley says, ultimately, the only people that really changes are the draft kids. We're typically playing extended spring games all the way up to the start of their season. So really, we're just moving live, real games. Quite honestly, it doesn't change a whole lot. We're going to keep bodies active after the season in gap camp to be ready to go out to affiliates. So that's it's almost like an extended spring training. And really, they need to keep these guys going and give them a workload to keep them through the full season, because next year when they go out to an affiliate, they're going to be playing 120, 140 games.
I love it. Some more lingo. The fire league and then the gap league. In the gap camp.
The gap camp. That sounds like a 70s funk disco band.
What does it mean for you to have more looks in competition at guys who will be repeating the level this year? Westman, when they're built up a little more as far as physically and experience being a professional baseball. So likely we're adding more innings onto those guys and give them more game reps and us more opportunities to view them. And that's the thing. Like once they get drafted, once you get into the complex, you're coming out of college, you're coming out of high school, you're coming out of the DSL where you're still learning how to be a professional baseball player. You're still, your body is still adjusting to playing every day. And all the workouts that go in between that and all the stuff that goes about being at your job. I mean, for those that you cook on the weekends or cook at night, try doing that for a living every day. And just you have to build up that skill and you build up all the things that come with it with the cook. You know, it's a callus in your hand. It's the strength in your arms. It takes a lot to become a professional baseball player and then do it consistently.
you know, this offseason, we were talking to all the pitchers, to Braden Nett and to all these guys. They were talking about arm care. And all of them were talking about that they had to learn a new routine, or change what they used to do to keep their, to get their body strong and active and limber and maintain that throughout the whole season. It's that's got to be one of the steepest learning curves these guys face.
Yeah, absolutely. And going even as they get into affiliate ball, they're still learning what kind of player they are. They're still learning how to control their bodies and build up their bodies for a full minor league season. And that can take, it could take several seasons just to get your body ready to be a professional ball player. All right.
Yep. So the next question on here, with so much of the roster being made up of lower profile signees, who are some of the names the fan base might not be familiar with who will get exposure during the season? So Riley says, Ismael Javier, coming over from the Dominican Republic, has been an interesting young shortstop. Spence Kaufman is super athletic and really just needed some experience and game reps, so we're looking for him to step up this year. Yandri Rojas is a talented young man. We'd like to get a little more consistency in his gameplay. Dante Grant is an outfielder who has real speed, and we're excited to see him get more action. He's had a really good extended program and I think can really swing the bat. And then a couple of those pitchers we're bringing over from the Dominican, Kleber Olmedo and Giovanni Pascual. Those would be some of the primary names. That's a couple of good names right there. Kleber Olmedo and Giovanni Pascual.
Bless you. Well, and the funny thing is, in the ACL, the Padres have a couple undrafted free agent high school players. So there's a couple arms that came out of high school that they didn't go to college. The Padres drafted them, signed them out of high school, then they didn't go to college. So it's kind of a, you know, usually you see those guys come out of college, the 4-year signs, the undrafted free agents. But there are a couple of high school undrafted free agents that are coming up too. So it's kind of interesting.
We already have a couple of mentions for those in our affiliate rundown today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so who isn't playing? While DeVries is already in full season ball, the organization is also excited about fellow 2024 international free agent, left-handed pitcher Humberto Cruz. He is not yet on the U.S. roster, but the Padres anticipate getting him stateside in the coming weeks. The 17-year-old from Monterrey, Mexico, will likely be built up slowly as the youngest pitcher who will work out of the Peoria Sports Complex this year.
Yeah, the Padres, they had to work a couple of trades to get some additional international pool money to sign him. That was a fun little adventure. See a couple of deals go down. Like, wait, what are they positioning this money for? So I just want to give a shout out real quick to Jerry Espinoza. Yeah. He is boots on the ground in Phoenix. So he's somebody, if you don't follow him already, look him up. JEspinoza1634 on Twitter. And he's a photographer. So that's primarily what he's doing, is taking pictures. But when he's at some of these games, he'll give you a little play-by-play of what's going on. So yeah, it's fun watching his feed, watching his name pop up in my feed. And then I get to go scroll out. Let's see who's doing what today.
And he'll tell you, it's not just the Padres he's following. He's following all the other teams too. So if you guys follow minor leagues players in general, he does all the Arizona Complex League. Don't steal his photographs. Please email him for credit, and you can use the photographs that way. But he is very protective of his work, and is more than welcome.
Well, he puts a big old watermark right across the middle of him. But we talked to a lot of the parents behind the scenes, and he's very generous with his photographs. Yeah, he doesn't ask much. He just wants the credit, and he'll have me. Because he sent these guys hundreds of photos of the kids that he's taken. So mom and dad, they're 1,000 miles away. They want to know what their kid's up to. So that's got to be fun for them too.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I do whenever I get out there and do an interview. I'll go stand in the camera. I'll take a bunch of pictures and I'll just text them. I'll just email them or DM them in Instagram. Hey, here's a couple of shots that I took, just to kind of, you know, just to have fun.
Well, that's all part of being a pro, you know. You get to see your name in a night, or see your picture in a uniform and all that. That's a lot of fun. All right, absolutely. Well, that's what we got for the minor league news today. But now we've got an affiliate rundown right after this break.
All right, on to the affiliate rundown. Let's start in Lake E, painting the corners. Tuesday, after struggling throughout most of the season, righty Will Varmet turned in a clean outing. The 23-year-old from Huntsville, Alabama, pitched 2 scoreless innings, allowed just 1 hit while notching a pair of strikeouts. He settled down in a pair of relief outings. He can still dial up to the upper 90s which has helped him strike out 14 batters in just 9 1/3 innings, but he's also walked 14. Now, we got to remember in A ball, that's going to be, we don't scout the stat line. Sure, we want nothing but strikeouts, but as these guys learn how to pitch and consistently pitch in pro ball, you're going to get these high strikeouts, the hard throwers, and you're going to, they have to find out how to throw it consistently for a strike. You're going to get the walks, but it's good to see him turn it around.
Right. One thing we keep hearing from the Padres, like all these interviews with player development people, they like guys that throw strikes.
Yeah.
They don't want guys that walk people. They don't want guys that waste pitches with balls outside the strike zone.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're still learning the mechanics. So there's still a lot of development in A ball. All right. So righty Eric Yost pitched well. I've watched this kid pitch twice and I'm impressed with him. He is a strike thrower. He loves to pound the strike zone. He's just done well. Every time I watched him, he pitched well again for the struggling Storm pitching staff. The 21-year-old from Northeastern worked a career high 6 innings, allowing 2 runs on 3 hits. He walked 2 and struck out 4. In 3 starts, his moving to the rotation, Yost has pitched a 2.63 ERA in 13 2/3 innings. He's walked 4 during that span with 15 strikeouts. That's what we're talking about. After Friday's loss, the Storm pitching staff has pitched to a 5.29 ERA. That's third worst in the league. Storm's a little tough team this year. A little tough.
Yeah, and you know, after this trade, it just got a little bit rougher.
Yeah.
That's kind of unfortunate, little thinner on the roster side.
Absolutely.
All right, so on the screws, last Tuesday, Braden Carpathios had a productive day, reaching base in all 5 of his plate appearances. He singled, doubled, and drew 3 walks. The 20-year-old signed with the Padres as an undrafted free agent in 2022. I think we just like those guys. It's a fun story. It's like a Cinderella story. Last season, Carpathios drew 44 walks in 42 games for the Storm, but didn't make much impact in the power department. This year, Carpathios has looked much improved with 5 doubles and a homer in 17 games for a 300, 457, 414 line. On Friday, Rosman Verdugo had a pair of hits, including his 3rd homer of the year. Last season, the Ensenada native hit 3 homers in 113 games. He's equaled that total in just 14 games.
Yeah.
Jay Beshears had 2 more singles and a walk, bringing his OPS to 972, which ranks 4th in the league. He also ranks 2nd in the league with a 520 OBP. So I wanted to highlight here in the batting around, Jay Beshears is just off to a monster start.
Yeah.
So 23 games, he's got 27 hits, 28 walks against 23 strikeouts. You always like to have more walks than strikeouts. He's batting 346 with a 518 on base, 449 slug. That's a 967 OPS. Now, when he was drafted, he's like 6'4", but he was listed as a second baseman. That's like, where's he going to play? Well, he's been playing mostly third base, but he's actually made 5 starts at shortstop so far this year. So he's more athletic than I thought he might be. You know, when I saw that kind of a player without a position kind of a thing.
Right.
Sounds like he can move around pretty little. I could get up there. Maybe we'll get up there this weekend and catch a game. We've got to get up there and see what's going on in Lake Elsinore.
Yeah, it's tough. Once again, I had something this weekend. I was up in L.A. driving around L.A. all Saturday. And then this next weekend, we got the Price's Will's graduation. And so I'm not going to be able to make it up there this weekend. A couple more weeks until we get up there to do the interviews. But I know you and Ange can probably make it up there. I'm a big Jay Beshears fan, and I love how he's playing shortstop and third base, keeping the guy athletic, keeping him working on the field, and not just kind of pigeonhole him at maybe second base or even first base. I know they got Santa Bria there, but just to kind of keep him athletic. And that bat plays, you know, and he'll start checking off all those boxes, and hopefully we can get up there and talk to him before he gets moved up to high.
Right. Yeah. So they're in town playing Inland Empire this weekend. The Dodgers are in town playing the Padres. I know that Angela and I are going to go to the game on Friday, but we might skip out on the Sunday game and head up to Lake Elsinore and catch that game instead. Who wants to sit with a bunch of stinky, rude Dodger fans all day anyway?
Right. Man, get some sunscreen up there in Lake Elsinore too, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of high A, painting the corners for Fort Wayne, Tuesday, Emmanuel Pinales pitched 6 scoreless on Tuesday. Pinales, a 23-year-old from Dominican Republic, became the first Fort Wayne pitcher this season to work more than 5 innings. The right-hander held Lake County to 2 hits and 1 walk while striking out a career high 7. Now, this is the 4th going into their fifth time into the rotation where they're starting to stretch out more, you're going to start hearing, and you've already heard a little bit of it, these guys pitching longest outing of the season. They're getting 75, close to 80 pitches now. They're starting to get into the full season, kind of the full season zone of the year.
Well, and in Fort Wayne in particular, we're starting to get out of that cold start of the season, and they've been seeing so much rainy weather. So once it starts to warm up, I think you'll see guys, their numbers will start to level out.
Absolutely. All right. So Wednesday, Jagger Haynes, put it all together. God, yes. Friend of the podcast, Jagger Haynes, the lefty went six innings, only allowed one run. Haynes needed 75 pitches to get through the six innings, posting an improved 46-29 strike to ball ratio. Following the Emmanuel Pinellas last night, it marks back-to-back quality starts for the Caps pitchers. Great to see Jagger kind of put it all together. And once again, it's not linear. So this next, if he can just build on that and continue forward, it's a great thing for Jagger because he, he's coming back from injury, and he just needs to get on track and be a little start building that consistency on the mound.
He's always one of those guys that the prospect writers write about when it's like somebody to keep your eye on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a talented guy. It's just a matter of getting the time and the opportunity to start bringing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Thursday, left-handed Miguel Cienfuegos pitched a complete game shutout in one of the doubleheaders. In doubleheaders, they only play seven innings. Cienfuegos gave up just two hits and no walks while striking out five. This marked the first time a team cast pitcher worked beyond six innings this season, and the first time Cienfuegos has in his minor league career. In the second game, Tyler Morgan started and went the first three innings with only one run allowed. Then Yoan Gonzalez tossed two scoreless innings to bridge the ball to Manuel Castro, who two perfect innings registered his third save of the season.
All right, then moving on the screws. On Wednesday, Devin Ortiz extended his on-base streak to 15 games with a pair of home runs. He now has a 313, 425, 537 line for the year. Devin Ortiz is just coming through for the Tin Caps.
Absolutely.
Ty Murphy on Friday single, doubled, and drew a walk in five plate appearances over his last four games. The former Oregon State Beaver, let's go Beavs, and Arizona State Sun Devil, not so much the Sun Devils, is 6-for-13 with three doubles and a triple. Murphy and fellow undrafted free agent Devin Ortiz have been the best hitters for a struggling Tin Caps lineup this season. Both players rank in the top 20 in OPS for the Midwest League. And then in his last four games, Anthony Villar is 6-for-13 with seven RBIs. So Anthony Villar, he's the catching prospect that's kind of getting lost in the shuffle a little bit. Don't take your eyes off of him. You got Brandon Valenzuela ahead. You got Ethan Salas behind. But Anthony Villar, the dude can play.
And he's played some second base. He played second base, I think, on Sunday. So they're getting him out from behind the dish. Yeah, they're getting him out from behind the dish and trying to move him around a little bit, either to keep his bat in the lineup or, to see what he can do.
Love that.
Absolutely. So for the batting around from Fort Wayne, the Fort Wayne relief group is first in the Midwest League with 141 strikeouts. They're tied for third in the Midwest League and stolen bases with 11. This is Homer Bush. Swiped four bags this last series against Great Lakes. As I was literally putting this in the agenda, he stole his 12 on Sunday. So I put it together like 11. Oh, there goes Homer Bush. 12. I had to add 12 in there.
Don't blink, he'll steal another one.
That's it. That's all I can do. So here's a little bit of baseball history. On May 4th, 1871, the Fort Wayne Kekogians played the Cleveland Forest Cities in the first ever professional baseball league game. The game played at present-day Camp Allen Park, just outside of downtown Fort Wayne, marked the start of the National Association, which later became the National League. Fort Wayne won 2-0, led by starting pitcher Bobby Matthews. Fort Wayne is home to the first professional baseball game ever played.
Yep.
Little known fact.
They are proud of that fact. I know John Nolan brings that up a few times every year. They have a long and rich baseball history in Fort Wayne. It just adds to the appeal of that town. You got to get out there and go visit Parker Field, Donovan.
I know. And they have the women's league also played there, and I can't remember the team that played there. I've seen the tweets. Yeah, there's the Daisies. Yeah. And so they celebrate them as well every year. And I think I saw a tweet earlier this week that they were looking for memorabilia from families of people who's played. If they had any of that stuff to bring it up to their attention or bring it to Fort Wayne, they want to display it and celebrate the women's league that they had in Fort Wayne as well.
Well, speaking of being a fan in Fort Wayne, I just want to throw a shout out to Monica Bush, Homer Bush Jr.'s mom.
Mama Bush.
She is at every single game. She's posting pictures of her son. She is living the dream right now. I mean, her son's living the dream too,
yeah.
But she is, I feel like I'm kind of vicariously living through her. I love seeing her interacting so much on Twitter with everybody.
Absolutely. And
all right, so let's move on to San Antonio. So, oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, no, I, you know, he's also, you know, Papa Bush is also a former Yankee. He participates in the fantasy league, in the fantasy team, in the fantasy camp for the Yankees. And I believe this last year, Monica went and actually played in, I'm not sure if it was a women's fantasy league, but I know she played there for the fantasy camp when he was there. So she well, can
Padres,
bring it.
Padres fantasy camp's co-ed, right? You had women yeah, in when you we were had playing, women, right?
Yeah, absolutely, as there as well. So Mama can play as long as much as she can, you know, Mama Bear.
Yeah. Well, you play ball like a girl. Give that a whole different meaning. That isn't an insult.
Hell yeah.
All right. So moving on to San Antonio, painting the corners. On Wednesday, Adam Mazur bounced back from a rough outing last week and recorded a quality start for the Missions en route to his second win of the season. The right-hander tossed six scoreless innings while allowing four hits and two walks. Along the way, he struck out five batters. The 23-year-old righty boasts a 2.39 ERA, 9.91 strikeouts per nine, and only 1.37 walks per nine to begin the season. If the Padres wind up having to dig deep into the minors and pull yep. somebody up, if they've got an opportunity where they know that somebody's going to get three, four, five starts, you know, you can kind of pencil that in. I think Mazur's the guy that they're going to call first.
I wouldn't be surprised. And it's funny because I, this morning on Bennett Woods, I listen to him most of the first hour I can listen to him before I have to really start getting to work. But I mentioned that it's like he could be not right now, you know, maybe halfway through the season, he's needed five or six other, you know, starts. Then you can maybe look at where he is and where he's at. And maybe he can get a start there. I wouldn't bring him up and pencil him into the line in the rotation right away, but he's certainly someone that you can look on for a spot start here, maybe two or three if someone goes on the IL. I think he's one of the first ones that come from the 2022 group up to the major leagues. Now we love Robbie Snelling. Robbie Snelling is having a fantastic season, but Mazur has really turned it on this year and he's absolutely must watch every start.
Yeah, Robbie Snelling's getting bit a little bit by the walk bug.
Yeah.
So it's finding the zone, figuring out how to find your spots at the edges without missing off the edge. I think that's kind of where he's at right now. Where Mazur, he's not walking anybody. He's striking out plenty. I think guys are only hitting about 220 off of him. So he's getting everything done right yeah. now. So Darvish was on the IL for a couple of turns. Now Musgrove is on the IL. Darvish is back. Matt Waldron, his last start, didn't go so well. So, right. And so I could see them trying to patch it together with Waldron, Vasquez, Brito, try to make that work with that number five spot. But if an opening comes up where they know that somebody's going to be on the shelf for the next 3-4 weeks, that's when I think they might go turn to one of these guys. Yeah. And Snelling's only 20. Mazur's 23. He had a little bit of college experience before being drafted. I think that plays a little bit as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving on Thursday was a rainout, so the Missions played two on Friday. Robbie Snelling started the first game and showed his trademark bulldog mentality early. In the bottom of the first against Arkansas, Harry Ford doubled with one man down in the frame. Southpaw left him stranded after inducing a flyout and striking out a batter. The lefty left the game in the sixth inning with the bases loaded and two out. Omar Cruz came in and got the next batter to fly out. Cruz yeah. remained in the game for the bottom of the seventh inning. The Southpaw struck out Cole Young to start the frame. Ford struck out the swinging for the second out. Packard drew a walk to keep the inning alive. Locklear struck out to end game one.
Woo!
Omar Cruz is another person to keep an eye yep. on. A former Padres farmhand, went over to Pittsburgh in the Joe Musgrove trade. They brought him back as a minor league free agent this year, and he's off to a really good start as a reliever.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then Victor Lizarraga. came down to earth for the first time in three starts. On Saturday, he allowed four runs as he put nine men on base in 3 2/3 innings. And keep in mind how young he is. I think he's only 20.
He's 21.
So replacing him, Jared Kolar provided solid relief. After entering in the fourth to replace Lizarraga, Kolar went the rest of the way, allowing just two late runs. Kolar struck out five and walked only one to save the San Antonio bullpen. Kolar's 2.78 ERA is second only to Adam Mazur on the missions. A little unsung hero coming out of the bullpen and saving the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And then Javian Sandridge. Javian Sandridge, we're going to be talking about him a lot this summer, I think. He's been a reliable option out of the missions bullpen this season. Southpaw struck out the side on Sunday while converting his second save attempt. In nine outings, he's 1-1 with a 1.08 ERA. He struck out 18 batters in 8 1/3 innings of work by allowing just one run. Another really good interview that Matt Friars had. He's got a very interesting past being drafted and then being able to find a loophole to go back to play college and then coming out as a minor league free agent, going to the Reds for a little bit, now coming over to the Padres. Electric, electric left-handed stuff. It's just a matter of refining the command. And I was impressed by the interview. He's a very kind of intellectual is not the right word. It comes. He's very thoughtful about what he's doing and how he's going about his work. And that's something you really have to be. I think a lot of guys are just natural athletes and they can just go out there and do what they do. And they don't stop to process why is this good thing happening? Why is this bad thing happening? What changes? He's been very kind of introspective about all of that. It's an interesting kind of a story.
Well, a little bit older, so we'll see. He could move fast. You know, he'd certainly move fast. All right, so on the screws Friday, Cole Cummings delivered his second homer of the year, a double and a pair of RBIs, pair of stakes. He went 0-for-2 in the nightcap. Among qualifiers, Cummings has the second highest OPS on the missions this season, trailing just Mortarella. So I guess now he leads the team in OPS. Okay, the former UC Santa Barbara slugger has a troubling 31% K rate, but he supplied solid power. He ranks second in the circuit with eight doubles. With Mortarella moved, Cummings should get regular reps at first base. And I tell you, every time I do it, I see this kid get up, he's hitting the ball. That strikeout rate is incredibly disheartening, but it's something that could be worked on. And he gets that down, he could be definitely be a prospect.
Well, and he's one of these guys that plays everywhere. He kind of does everything, whatever the team needs him to do. Sounds like he's got that professional approach, the way he goes about his work. And they see that. I think that's part of why Matthew Batten moved as quickly as he did, because he just, anything they needed, he took care of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Ray Patrick Didler was one of the highlights of game one, while Juan Zabala was a highlight of game two. Didler went 2-for-3 in game one with two doubles. For Zabala, he went 2-for-4 in game two with a double and an RBI.
All right. So the batting around here, we talked about the awkward scene in Little Rock when Nathan Mortarella got pulled off the field. And then I saw the shot afterwards while Jacob Marcy and Mortarella were dapping up all their teammates. That's got to be just such a weird way to leave a game and leave an organization. This is the team that raised you. This is everybody that you know in professional baseball is right there in that room. And now you've got to pack up your stuff and go off to a whole new beginning.
Dude, it was kind of wild too, because he goes in and the game pretty much paused. They paused the game because he went in there. Both of them grabbed their bats. They're really good friends. That's the thing. Him, those two and Grand Pauly and Jackson Merrill, they're all really good friends. So they grabbed their bats, grabbed their gloves, and then just walked off the field. I know they might have left a bag there or something like that they come in with the bag, but they both hugged the batter that was at the plate. And then once you got to first base, they hugged the first base coach. I think there was someone else on first base they hugged. Like they stopped the game to watch those guys walk off. And I would think even for not only just the missions, but the other guys on the other side of the field there, where like, that's how you do it, and that could happen to me. That's very much what could happen to me, is like watching those guys get traded. And I found
that's how fast everything can change. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said before, that's the quickest path to the major leagues now, is with those guys in the Marlins organization.
Right. So then after those guys left the game, Chase Valentine had quite an eventful game too. After Marcy and Martorella were removed, Valentine replaced Martorella as a pinch runner. Remember, he was on second base at the time.
Yeah.
So he scored later that inning. He then played second base for a few innings. At the plate, he drew two walks. Then he pitched a scoreless sixth inning, retiring all three batters he faced. So a little bit of everything. Just, hey, we need somebody to do this. We need somebody to do that. We need somebody to change the light bulbs. You know, go sweep the floors. Hey, you know, whatever you need, I got you.
And I tell you, Jace Valentine's that guy because he's been down. I could have swore he might have played an inning or two in Lake Elsinore this year. Bounced to Fort Wayne for a minute. I think he went from there straight to Double A. One of those guys, and you need him in the system. Like, hey, jump on a flight. We need you here. That second game was an absolute rout. It was a tough game. I think it was a bullpen game. I didn't even stick around to watch Chase Valentine pitch the sixth innings. I'm like, okay, I need to move on with my evening. It was just too heartbreaking. But wow, you know, that's one of those things where, like, yeah, hey, do you ever pitch? Yeah. Well, a couple guys got traded I was playing with, you know, then I got, you know, I took his place and I ended up pitching the game. One of those stories that you get from professional ball players where it's just the weird stuff that happens in minor league baseball.
Yeah, that's a weird day that probably feels weird at the time, but you look back and laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to El Paso. Pain in the Corners, Tuesday, Jackson Wolf. Struck out 10 batters in 5 innings to set a new season high for the single-game strikeouts by an El Paso pitcher. Not just Jackson, but an El Paso pitcher. The Chihuahua struck a combined 15 players that night. This last Sunday, he was pitching when I was putting this together, had another excellent outing again. So Jackson Wolf is another one of those guys. We've had him here in the past, friend of the podcast, got traded. Was it with the Pirates?
Yeah, he's with the Pirates. He's part of the G-Man Choi Rich Hill deal.
Yeah. They released him. We signed him as a minor league free agent, and he's pitching in El Paso. Granted, he has to absolutely be.
No. We claimed him back on waivers.
Right. Claimed him back on waivers.
So he's already on the 40 man. He's right on the doorstep of. And so, you know, again, one of these openings comes up, he's going to get a call.
Yeah. But he's one of those guys that absolutely has to be perfect. He does not throw hard. He's that low 3/4 arm slot where it just sweeps across the plate, you know, and it's more deception than in location than it is powering the ball and striking guys out. But hey, he's come over. His first outing was horrible. He got lit up. Since then, he's had two solid straight starts. The one being Sunday night and this last one last Tuesday. Jackson Wolf back in howling with the Chihuahuas. I just had to say that.
Oh, the Chihuahuas, they should have some fun with that. I hope they do. I hope they're howling down there.
Chico, right?
Howls.
So Wednesday, Sean Reynolds and Kevin Copps, Nick Hernandez, and Austin Davis all pitched scoreless outings out of the bullpen. The Chihuahua struck out 10 Space Cowboys on the night after striking out 15 the night before. Thursday, Lake Bacher continues to shine in a big way, throwing a scoreless inning and striking out a pair. The 28-year-old righty has executed in fairly heavy use for the Chihuahuas so far, posting a 3-0 record with a 1.15 ERA, 20 strikeouts and 15 2/3 innings of work. Like we said it before, we will say it almost every episode. He did really well. And when he was signed as a minor league free agent, after being in our system for so long, I really thought he was going to get a shot in the bullpen. And I thought he pitched pretty good during spring. They sent him to Triple A. They had other guys come in. I certainly think he can be someone that can see time in the bullpen this year. And stick.
Well, all of those guys you just mentioned, so Sean Reynolds is already on the 40-man. Mm-hmm. Kevin Copps, we've been waiting for him, and he seems to finally have found that next gear. Nick Hernandez, he pitched with the big league club a couple of times last year. And then Austin Davis has major league experience. All five of those guys, I think you could pick any of them, and you have a good odds to contribute this year.
Yeah, and it's a long season, so I definitely wouldn't be surprised to see any one of those guys, if not several of those guys, making it to the majors this year.
Yep. All right. So on the screws, Tuesday, Tirso. It was the Tirso Ornelas show in El Paso as the outfielder hit a walk-off 2-run shot to give the Chihuahuas the win. And oh man, he pimped it a little bit too.
Yeah.
Ornelas walk-off blast capped a 3-hit night. He finished a double shy of the cycle, drove in 3 runs. On April 16th, he went 0-for-4 to drop his batting average to a paltry 0.88. This was the low point. Since then, the Tijuana native has gone 14-for-34 with two doubles and two homers. As of Saturday, he's slashing 275, 348, 450, just below average league average production. But that's just below league average after being just slumping as hard as you can slump for the first, what, 3 weeks of the season. So he's turned it around. Something's clicked in that kid.
Yeah. And once again, same thing happened last year. Like, I think he started in Triple A. I think he started with the Chihuahuas and then was sent down to Double A. And then we talked about it. And then he went back up and just some other gear happened. And he put it all together and seemed like he's doing it again this year. The Padres, I think, really want to see more power out of him. I think he needs to stay where he is. You know, just if he's not going to be a power guy, let him be the guy that hits a lot. You know, let him get the singles. Let him, you know, find the gap on the occasion. Play some okay outfield. Maybe he can be a fourth outfielder. But just stop trying to change a guy or make him into something that he might not be. And that's a power hitter.
I mean, I don't know that they're looking. I mean, you look at the frame, and the guy's built. And you look at him; he looks like he should be a power hitter. The problem is, you look at his batted ball profile over the last several years, and he puts the ball on the ground a ton.
Yeah.
And so, when you're in the low minors, you can take advantage of bad infield defense and you know the infield quality, the quality of the actual playing surface isn't as good. But you get up to the majors, and all of that disappears because ground balls turn into outs. And so I do think that they've been working on something to get him to hit more line drives
in the air
and, you know, get a couple of those line drives, turn into to home runs, not necessarily try to turn him into a launch angle king, but at least get the ball up above the infielders' heads for base hits. So one last note here from El Paso. Tuesday's walk-off was the Chihuahuas' second walk-off win of the season. Their first walk-off home run since Daniel Johnson's against Round Rock on September 8th, 2023.
All right, let's finish it up with the ACL, pain in the corners, undrafted free agent, Langston Burkett. Is it Burkett?
Burkett. I think it's Burkett.
Burkett had a rough go in his first professional game. After breezing through the first frame, the 6'6", 19-year-old was tagged for a pair of runs in each of his next two innings. He'll be one to keep an eye on throughout the year as he settles into his professional career. Once again, 19 years old. Everyone's really good, you know, at ACL, everyone's really good. You throw it down the middle, they're going to hit it. And you learn to go with that. So on the screws, Ethan Long and Caden Hollow led the charge as each had a pair of doubles as a part of a three-hit game, as part of three hit games. Hollow, 23, a left-handed hitting catcher from Dixie State University, now Utah Tech. You would never think that Dixie State University would be in Utah, more like Mississippi, but is repeating after posting a 975 OPS in 16 games and 47 plate appearances and 23. Long, Arizona native, and ASU Sun Devil.
Yeah, nah.
Signed as an undrafted free agent last year. Is ASU and Oregon in the same division? Are they in the same? I don't.
Well, they were for ages, but now the Pac-12 just evaporated, so... No, I think they're in the Big East or the ACC or I don't know. College conferences don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah. It's like the NL, the AFC? The NFC used to have teams on like the East Coast.
Well, yeah. I remember when the Atlanta Braves used to be part of the NL West. That never made sense to me.
Right. So that's it. That's all we got. You guys, once again, hey, I'll post it in the description. Go get the sick merch, dude. And ladies, there's shirts. There's coffee mugs that change colors. You can be cool going to a Padre games, having Friars on the Farm. Yeah, I listen to those guys.
Just so I can advertise for us a little bit. I got a couple of t-shirts. That's about it right now. I'll have to expand the wardrobe.
Absolutely, a little bit. So until then, go Padres. You can find me on Twitter at SD Donovan.
Yep, I'm at Zippy_TMS. We'll catch you next week. Go Padres.
Go Padres.